Welcome to this episode of the Down the Pub podcast. In one way, we're quite happy that we get to talk about a Wanderers game again. On another hand, the result fucking sucked. Myself, Chris, and Gary are going to break down the performance a little bit. How's it going, guys?
Very well. And I feel like collectively, Chris and I will lessen the blow of that fucking sucks comment because from speaking offline, we're both very positive. So we'll leave you to be Eeyore and we can be Piglet and Winnie, dipping our fists in honey.
I just mean that the fact is that we lost the game, so that's what I mean by it fucking sucks. I don't mean like, Jesus Christ, I don't mean anything about the performance, for fuck's sake, please. I have all sorts of messages. Jesus. All right, so I guess starting off with you, Chris, then were you kind of surprised with the lineup? We kind of really went for an experienced lineup. I think a lot of people were surprised to see the Telfers and the Valeskis in the squad. What did you think of it?
Yeah, it definitely did throw me off. And I have to give OneSoccer credit. They got the graphics right at the start of the match. It was one of the first topics that we chatted on in the season, in my group on Reddit. 3-4-3 for the Wanderers. 4-4-5-1 for Pacific. What's going on here? And in reality, it ended up kind of being what was displayed. So it kind of made sense in the end from that perspective, if it was a 3-4-3, if that was Patrice's idea, to have that experience up front. The way the press was consistent, even if it was getting broken down at times a little bit too much. I think that might be something where they try to fix or maneuver in the future, putting a little bit of younger legs maybe on those roles, having somebody like Valeski actually be the top of the attack with a Farrin or a DS, and not to disrespect Probo at all. I thought he was fantastic in every pocket that he found himself in, but I found that that also in itself kind of took away the effectiveness of that front three of the press, especially in the first half. It really was a tale of two halves, and I think the veterans actually showed that as well. I think that they even had a little bit of rust to get off the bones. We know preseason is preseason. It can only take you so far in terms of match fitness and flow. That first match of the season almost feels like a reset in itself. And I wasn't as down on the selection. I was just a little bit thrown off and surprised because what we had been projecting with our lineups, both on the air and off the air, what we had seen in the open training, what we were hearing, what we then saw was kind of against what we believed was kind of Patrice's ethos. It was very balanced. It was less flowy, if you will. But I think that that was kind of what Patrice was going for a Valeski, bringing Telfer into the role as well, breaking a bit of ice, maybe. You never want to give away a game or give away a result. And I'm not disrespecting those guys at all. Especially Telfer, he grew into the game, I found. And I was a little more impressed with his performance before he went off. But to me, the experience, I think you break that ice, you lead by example, and if it doesn't work, it's a lot easier to have those guys on the bench because they're such professionals, because they've been there, done that, ebbs and flows of full seasons. It's just starting. So that I think is why Patrice maybe leaned to the veteranship a little bit more.
How do you think that we kind of, what was the tactic starting off? And how do you think that Pacific kind of counteracted the way that we'd set up?
I wasn't so surprised about how we set up because, again, the interview we did with Patrice pre-season with Pints with Patrice, he mentioned Leverkusen and Inter Milan as being teams he'd watched over the off-season. And from a shape perspective, that's exactly what I saw. We had three at the back, we had two wing backs, we had two holding midfielders, we had two tens, and we had a striker as well. So the width came from the wing backs largely, especially on the right side, but we'll talk about the left side later. Solidity came from having the two holding midfielders who were fairly disciplined with where they were standing. And then the creativity came from Probo mainly, but also Telfer, who were both kind of narrow floating tens. Although, again, Telfer did peel out left quite a lot. And then Valeski at the tip of that kind of front three diamond, front three triangle, I should say. busy, put himself about, but probably didn't see as much of the ball as he would have liked. I think tactically, although we're a different shape from last season, a lot of things are still the same. There's still a back three, which we did play with for all of last season, even if it didn't look like that on a pre-match graphic. It's still a box midfield, but this time we're not inverting anyone. The box midfield kind of stays the same from the start of the game to the end with two holding midfielders and two tens. So those things are still the same. It's the exterior of the pitch that has changed, because now we have two true wing backs, two very, very attacking wing backs. And it's just allowed us to kind of to change up our variations a little bit. And again, we'll get to that later on when we start to talk about the left hand and right hand sides. But yeah, very Leverkusen, very Inter. And I was pleasantly surprised by how organized we looked, to be honest, because when you do, although there were similarities, when you do change your kind of your overall shape, you would expect there to be a few weeks of teething problems. And from a results perspective, that probably did happen, but not from a performance perspective in my mind.
But as Chris kind of said there, that it was kind of a tale of two halves. Do you think that Merriman did a good job of counteracting the way that we set ourselves up? I thought that for the first half especially, I kind of said to you guys, like, we kind of huffed and puffed a little bit. We didn't create many clear opportunities. I know Dan Nimick had a header that almost went in, but it just kind of felt like we were probing a lot but not getting very far. Do you think that was just like Merriman just kind of set his team pretty well against us?
I think a lot of that is details as well, because I think to a ball that Probo played through to Telfer, and if his first touch is better, he's literally one-on-one with the goalkeeper.
That
just in that small action where his first touch is a little heavy, that goes from being a first 30 minutes where we score to we look a bit heavy. And I also think if you look at our front three, they've never played a competitive game together in their lives. They've never been in the same roster together in their lives. Probo, Telfer and Valeski. These relationships take time. So I think it was an element of that, but also other teams do tactics as well. At the end of the day, like we're so Wanderers focused. We always talk about what we're doing, but other teams put just as much prep in. So that's how it's going to go sometimes.
I'm not trying to be negative. I just think that we, like, you know, instead of us just being cheering, it's kind of nice. It's good to have a kind of a balance to what we're talking about. I don't know about you, Chris, but it seems to take Lorenzo quite a while to get into this game, as if he wasn't sure where exactly he was supposed to be, and he was trying a lot of stuff that just kind of wasn't going off. Do you think there was a reason for that?
I think that was what Gary was getting at with the double pivot didn't quite have that creative base, whether it was Daniels or Morelli or anybody last year that would kind of play in front of, or then in the reverse end, somebody playing behind them, whether it was Mo or Armin Wilson, for example. I think Lorenzo, coming from the PSG system, which is also very three midfield based, him playing as with two midfielders with a guy like Rampy, who, as much as I love him, he plays a vertical style more than a horizontal style, pardon me, more than a vertical style. He's a guy that likes to get from end to end rather than box to box. Rampy loves to play box to box, but so does Lorenzo in that essence too. So finding and seeing those two growing into the match, like you said, Anthony, first half, a little bit timid, not himself, couple of misplaced passes. Second half, I was a little less worried. He was hitting a couple of wide balls out to Zach and to Wesley as well. So I was a little less worried by the end of the match, but I will admit for the first half hour or so, my concerns kind of bubbled up. And this is no slight to Lorenzo. We obviously, the three of us, love him dearly, love him to death. Arguably the most skilled, talented, and highest quality player that's ever played for this club. But we know one of the worst games he had last season was that playoff match against Pacific. So the deja vu, I won't lie, kind of settled in a little bit. But I think by the time the end of the match came, when Pacific was a little less pushy and pressy and a little more wall, if you will, a little more backed off, Lorenzo was able to be on the ball a little bit more, take a second to look around and feel the space a bit more. And I found that by the time the game finished up, he looked and felt more like himself. And I would honestly, like, I hope the rotation isn't severe, because he's the type of person I think on Thursday that will flourish based on Vancouver's playing style. This is set up for him to have a huge rebound. But to answer your question, Anthony, I think that's what it is much like some of the other players, much like Patrice, the tactics are changing. We didn't play with like a lot of hard two midfield last year. There was either a creative person in front or Mo behind. And I love Rampy again, you know, a guy that likes to play box to box, but Mo provided a lot more security, I felt, for Lorenzo when Rampy was away. Not saying that Rampy can't provide that security for Lorenzo, but Rampy contributes in different ways as well, that it will become conducive. They will be able to work together and fuse together. You know, where they had that season together last year, I'm not sure statistics what it is, but there weren't too many times where Lorenzo and Rampy were on the field together for 90 minutes. So that, I think, would be one of the positives and the bonuses. Even if there was a struggle to get into the match, those guys got 90 minutes together, and we haven't seen that a lot in the last year.
Well, you know, I definitely came away from the game feeling that it was a kind of a missed opportunity for us, like, to at least get a point, because I thought that we at least deserved that from the kind of possession that we had, and especially towards the end, what we were kind of able to create. But I kind of want to get your thoughts, Gary, on, you know, we all kind of expected, well, I did anyway, for Coyne would be playing, just because of the way he plays, the kind of press that he does. He kind of bothers defenders quite a lot. How did you see, or was there any difference with the way that Valeski was asked to play within the system? Because we didn't get to see much of him in the preseason game, because he's been injured for quite a while. So, well, what did you think of him, and what do you think he brought that would have been different towards Coimbra?
I think he's lighter on his feet. He's more of a subtle mover. Coimbra is very obvious. His movements are very obvious. You can't miss him because the size of him, and also his aggression and his energy and his enthusiasm when he plays. He's a player that fans absolutely adore, because similar to Peter Schaller in the first couple of years, for all the faults, you just could not miss him because the way he carried himself on the pitch. Moving to Valeski, like I said, a lot more, he's a much subtler player. I'm still getting used to him, to be honest. That's the first time I've seen him play 90 minutes in my life. And it was a fairly quiet game for him. He didn't quite get the service. I felt like, and I think we'll get to this later, but I think we tried to cross it too many times, and I'm not sure that's his game. I think he's more playing off the shoulder of a defender, but because Pacific was sat quite low, that was difficult to do. That space wasn't really in behind their defenders. So then he goes to his next kind of strong point, which is Fox in the box, sniffing out chances. And he had a couple of half chances he snatched at, but nothing too concrete. So yeah, it's a hard performance to gauge, because it's how much was stuff not created for him and how much couldn't he find the space. But yeah, look forward to getting used to him as a player over the next few months.
So just to kind of touch back on what you were saying, Gary, just about the right-hand side, Dan Nimick was almost like playing as a rifle at one, like a right back at one stage, because he was so... he's pulling himself out, and he was, geez, that sounds terrible, he was just going to the side, and he was almost like playing on the wing, but we had so much success down that right hand side with him, Fernandez and Pogo kind of pushing across as well. So do you think that was something that was we picked up on from the get-go, or is it something that we just kind of gradually just worked our way, that this is where we're going to get a lot of our joy from?
I think players know where the talent is on the pitch. And if you compare our right side to our left side, obviously there's talent on both sides, but the level of familiarity and the level of quality we have on the right side of the pitch means most weeks we're going to be right side dominant. If you look at that kind of pod of Dan Nimick, Zach Fernandez, Lorenzo Calegari, Giorgio Probo, like three of them played almost every game together last season in the same pod, so they know each other very well. And Giorgio Probo's kind of like a session musician, isn't he? Where you just kind of plonk him in a new band and he learns every song in the set list in 30 minutes. That's kind of what he reminds me of. Like, he has those relationships already because he He knows the game. So I think naturally you're going to favour that side. It's a good point on Dan Nimick as well. It was interesting to see him do that because I don't think the other two centre-backs had the permission to be as adventurous going forward and to get into attacking positions. And if the right-sided centre-back is the one that is allowed to do that, then that just encourages even more overloads on that side. So, yeah, familiarity is part of it, but also there's a lot of talent on that side of the pitch. Regarding the left side, I think I looked at that pass map. Did you see the pass map and the heat map
Yep.
that guy made? Really, really interesting. And you can clearly see there the right-sided bias. But it was also interesting that we didn't have as much width on the left-hand side. And what I can't work out is if that was a tactical thing or whether naturally if you're overloading the right-hand side, the left-hand side naturally moves more central anyway to get closer to the ball. So I don't know which one of those two things it is, but I'm sure all will be revealed.
I feel like sometimes even professional footballers are like school kids, you know, and it's like wherever the ball is, you tend to just kind of drift towards it. But I actually thought, like, overall, I thought that, especially in the second half, I thought Wes was really good. I thought he brought quite a lot, and his crossing was pretty good. But I Chris, for yourself, like, Julian Dunn, like, you know, he was one of our big signings. We kind of were worried about his injury record a little bit. How do you think, obviously, apart from the penalty, which kind of wasn't his fault, like the guy kind of came in behind him and he didn't really get seen, but overall, how do you think he slotted in alongside Lockery and Nimick, known quite well that those two were like thick as thieves all like last year? So how do you think he slotted in?
Like you said, we'll put the penalty aside. You know, you're talking about a guy that hasn't played in 2 years, and then he's playing on turf. And anybody who's played on turf knows sometimes you just catch and it buckles. And I shouldn't say hilariously enough, because, you know, it's not funny. You feel bad for the guy, but Thomas Müller-Jagr, who, and that's his home pitch. So if anybody's going to know how to avoid getting those stuffs, if you will, it would be him. And even he had a buckle probably about 2-3 minutes later. And I giggled to Kayla. I said, they're all kind of breaking the ice right now. They're all kind of sort of getting the nerves out. So with Dunn, to just refer to the penalty quickly, I think one of his best attributes is that downhill power and pace that he has. And like I said, you know, when he doesn't play for 2 years, you still have those physical attributes once you come back, but the application of them sometimes fails on you. And I think that's all it was. You know, he hasn't played at this level particularly. He's played at a higher level, but what we know about the CPL is there's a physicality there, and the fastest, quickest, best paced players, it comes with a little bit of strength too. Like hockey, I don't want to make that comparison. It's too easy. It's too simple, but that's where it comes from. A lot of leg power, a lot of leg energy. So in his case, when it comes to not playing for as long as he has, the timing and the application of that tackle, you feel bad for him, but you see what makes him so desired by Patrice almost in that same motion. So it's kind of funny how after the fact, you know, a couple of interceptions, a couple of fantastic tackles, filling in the spaces that Nimick and Lowry were leaving, especially later in the match with Kale, as he was starting to get forward like Nimick was, you could see that there's kind of that off the ball, away from the play cohesion, where he knows the right spaces and the right places to be. We know Pacific wasn't really offering a lot going forward most of the match, especially the last half hour. But when they did, it seemed like Dunn was always there, whether it was to be on the end of the attempted through ball, whether it was to be that square pass for Filion when he got the ball. He already seems to kind of have that silent cohesion with both center backs, Kale and Dan. And now I'm really curious to see if this is where Patrice wants the relationship to go in the future, or if this was just kind of a tactical thing, like against Vancouver, are we going to do three in the back again? Or are we going to go to two? If we go to two and Julian's not playing, you know, mentally speaking, is he still going to be checked in? Is he going to be deflated? Or is this something that has been discussed? When you don't play for as long as he's gone without playing, jumping into a 28 game season, especially stretched out as far as it is over time, it's not realistic. So we know that he probably has, whether it's a minutes limit or a game limit or something, to protect his health and his fitness for the entire season. But I like that, similar to with Lorenzo and Rampy as the two in the midfield, and seeing like Telfer and Valeski up front, kind of shaking the rust off, breaking the ice, and seeing what's there, because you can only see so much, like I said, in preseason. So, you know, I feel bad for the guy, but I think after the penalty, and I've been saying this on Twitter for the last couple of days, I think he put in a really good account for himself. And then rewatching the game, I noticed a lot how he was a good space filler, if you will, when Nimick and Kale were getting forward.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought he was excellent, actually, considering, as you said, he hasn't played him quite a long while. And the penalty, like, it was just one of those things, wasn't it? He just kind of got caught on the blind side, and I just, you know, you don't even realize that somebody's behind you in that way. Like, it also stemmed from the fact that we didn't close down in midfield, because it was Ndom, or whatever his name is, like, kind of just burst through and nobody stopped him. So it's kind of, you can't really blame him. I know he's going to blame himself, but he shouldn't.
On the penalty, like, because I watched it back a couple of times, when you watch coaching videos and stuff on YouTube, and you expect them to be talking about all this kind of high concept tactical stuff, but really what you see the coaches talking to players about is body shape and like step patterns and how you strike the ball, stuff you don't even think about. And I think with that, he just got his step pattern wrong. He started to move towards the ball to lunge at it before he really should have done, and he kind of got caught under his own feet. And yes, it's rustiness. That's all it is.
It's kind of like why initially, when it happened, and then even the first replay they showed, it awkwardly looked like he made a nice tackle. And then when you saw the second replay, you kind of, and no disrespect, Julian, if you're listening, brother, we love you. We love you. We love you. But you were like, ah, shit, he completely missed that. But, you know, I've played on this surface my whole life, more or less, like U14 through my adult years. It's so easy to just that buckle, like you step and you think you can pull that boot out and maybe sweep. And then next thing you know, that foot is stuck and you're basically tackling the lad like a rugby player. And you don't even mean to sometimes. It's just the surfaces. And that's what, you know, it's a criticism of the Canadian Premier League, but it's also one of the unique things that I kind of love about it. There's only a couple of grass pitches and multiple different turf surfaces. So it's not hard. It's hard on the body. And, you know, I know the guys don't love it. And in a weird way, as much as the grass here at the Wanderers grounds is our gem, in a weird way, it's going to be better, if that makes any sense, once it switches to turf, because there's going to be more consistency. The players are going to be able to prepare their bodies better. And to me, that's just a guy. And he was in Norway, I think, before he was with the Wanderers, correct? So, like, I know they do have a lot of plastic pitches there just because of the weather.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's you know, he has the MLS background as well, academy background. So he probably has played on that type of surface a lot. But like I said, it's not like riding a bike sometimes. You know, that plastic surface can definitely catch you.
Speaking about the plastic surface, big shout out to Chris Tordek for his goal celebration. Doing a knee slide on AstroTurf is probably worst ideas in the world. It looked like you could see his kneecaps afterwards, because the skin had like been burnt off his knee as well. I guess like sometimes the stuff gets on top of you, but yeah. So Gary, you know, just coming into the second half, what did you notice? A change in the way that we were playing, or was it a change in the way that Pacific were playing, and that they were sitting back a lot more and kind of allowing us to come on? Because like, I hate to make a comparison, but it felt to me a little bit in the first half we were almost like Tottenham at the beginning when Ange took over. Like, we were, like, really dynamic and, like, getting at teams and stuff like that. And now, like, teams have kind of, as always happens, they know our system now, and they just allow us to have the ball and sit back and counterattack. So do you think, like, that we changed something, or did Pacific change the way that they kind of had set themselves up?
I thought we were dominant in the second half, and from a statistical perspective, I think we had like 73% possession. It was just, and we played in waves. We won it back really quickly. And again, it reminded me of the playoff match where Pacific just sat in and said, okay, can you unlock the door? Can you break through a medium to low block? And I just wish we'd been a bit more patient in the second half. I felt like we were a bit too quick to sling a cross into the box. We had 35 crosses in that match, which is a huge amount of crosses. Wow. And I felt like we were horseshoeing a little bit. And then as soon as as soon as the ball got out to a wing back, they would just chuck a cross in there. And a few times I just remember thinking, just be patient. It's not the 90th minute, it's the 64th minute or the 70th minute or the 75th minute. Be patient, pass it back into Lorenzo, see what his picture looks like, because his picture is different from your picture. So I just a few times, I mean, I just wish they would have been a little bit more patient instead of that cross being the final pass, if it could have been the penultimate pass, because they laid it off to someone who had a better angle or a better picture. Because like I said earlier, we had Valeski in the box, then we had Ferran in the box. Both fantastic players, but I'm not sure getting on the end of hopeful crosses is their game exactly. So that I think that will improve in the coming weeks. The thing I did like is our off the ball work in the second half. I felt like as soon as Pacific got the ball back and tried to exit, we were really good at cutting off those angles, of closing them down quickly. The press was quite good as well. And we looked kind of like a robust team in the second half. But I would like to have seen a little bit more cuteness around the box, to be honest.
Yeah, I think like our best chance of the game actually came from doing that, where it was the Zach Fernandez's shot, where that was, it was a great save. But I think you're right. I didn't realize it was that many crosses. And Valeski is kind of tall, but I mean, when you're playing against three defenders that are just as tall, and you're just slinging the cross in and hope for the best, it's not our game either. It's not something that we really do. So I did kind of want to get your thoughts. You know, like, obviously us keeping Zach Fernandez was a big part of our summer, or sorry, our postseason work. We managed to keep him at the club, but he just looked kind of head and shoulders above a lot of people on the pitch on the weekend. So just kind of get your thoughts a little bit on how you thought he did, and has his role changed at all, or is he pretty much doing the same thing as last year?
He's pretty much doing the same thing as last year, because last year he was a very, very attacking right back, and he's essentially still a very, very attacking right back. Interesting, in the second half, he moved to left back for a little while, him and Wesley switched. I like that we can do that. I like that now, last season we trialed Zach as a left back, so proved he could do it. Like, there's a proof of concept there. So we can use that in game if we need to shake things up. And Wesley coming over to the right is no problem, because he's a very, he used to play as an inverted right winger. So no big deal. But in terms of what Zach brings, I agree. He looked probably the best player on the pitch. Definitely the most dangerous player on the pitch. And he can stretch the game in a way that we don't have another player who can stretch games like he can, in terms of his pacing behind, his ability to kind of, he likes to make that run where he goes on the outside of the fullback and he wants the pass played between their left back and their left centre back in that sort of corridor there. That's the pass he's always looking for. And it scares defenders. And that's why you end up having teams like Pacific who sit back and end up with a medium to low block, because they know the pace of him is frightening. And the last thing on him I'll say is that I cannot wait to see how him and Probo's relationship develops, because I think something could happen there. I think something could happen there. And looking forward to seeing what.
So the good thing is that, like, we have a quick turn around, and we've got a game to kind of get that one out of our system. Unfortunately, it's against a team that won 4-1 on the weekend. But just before we kind of get people's thoughts on Vancouver, I kind of wanted to just get, like, who you thought was your man of the match and why, Chris.
Man of the match. Ooh, that's actually a really good question. I would say Probo, only because like I said, I was away for a second, so maybe that's what Gary was getting at, but the way that he fused things with Zach, who would probably be like my 1B man of the match selection. Once that finishing product, I think, clicks, you're going to see those two form just a unique relationship that we haven't really had at the club, because we haven't really seen the fullbacks have this type of freedom more centrally in the attacks at times. Our fullbacks, when they get forward, it's just to stay out there and whip a ball in or pass a ball back to Peter, and Peter hits a 40-yard pass. I mean, now it's Dan. But yeah, I would say probably Probo, just because I felt like in both the midfield phase and in the attacking phase, he might have been the best player. And, you know, we've seen in the small spurts that we've seen him in the open training, he is a player that likes to get into the 6 to 8 position, but then drag that ball forward, whether it's with that long pass, few dribbles, quick pivot, make the space, make the run. He showed me a lot more than I was anticipating in both of those phases. Like, you know, Gary said, the structure wasn't necessarily a 3-4-3, but it looked like that in base at times. So I was kind of like, you know, how's he going to look out here on the wing? But he wasn't an out and out winger at all. He was tucking in. He was tucking in behind. He was letting Zach make the overlaps and at times underlaps. So it was a really good debut performance for him. It's one of those performances where you kind of wish it was at the grounds, because I think the fans would have clicked and fell in love with him a little bit. But, you know, it's something we have to look forward to in the 27th and beyond.
Same question to you, Gar.
Yeah, I largely agree. I think Zach Provo or Dan, anyone in that right pocket, really. But just an honourable mention, and I say this because I love player development, and I love seeing players recognise a flaw in their game and proactively try to improve it. And I thought Cale Lockery's passing was excellent. And that's the one thing, that's the only question mark we ever had over him. And I listened to him on a podcast in the off season with Martin from the Coast, and Cale talked in depth about how all off season he'd been working on improving not only the accuracy of his passes, but the variation of them as well, the different types. And I thought he played some very interesting passes. There was one pass which shocked me in the moment of seeing it, because I'd never seen him play that pass before, where he was standing as a left centre back and he switched it diagonally, almost like a daisy cutter along the ground out to the right wing. And he took out about 3 Pacific players with the pass. And I thought, that's new for you. That's something you've developed in the off season. And so honourable mention to Cale for that. But yeah, probably Zach. I'll go Zach as well.
Can I real quick, I have to echo Gary, actually. I'm glad that he brought up Cale, because later in the match, as Pacific was dropping back, Cale was sort of taking like Nimick's right center back role on the left center back. And as Gary said, making little intricate passes and then runs off the passes, having an eye for an attack, something that we haven't seen before. And I think some of the other teams were probably watching that match and were like, asterisk, Lockery, forward runs, asterisk, like making a note on their game plans to make sure that if they have a lead late in a match, you know that that's coming. I hope goodness gracious nobody does, because I think that it's going to unlock something in his game, whether it's a confidence or just a more of a flowing option for our attack as well. You know, we've got this three in the back system, but as the match went on, Rampy was dropping deep almost as to be like that other center back with Julian Dunn. And it just allowed Dan and Cale to get forward, which allowed Wesley and Zach to get even more forward. So it was interesting to see how whatever system Patrice is trying to generate and mold here, that it goes hand in hand with what Gary was just talking about, a player wanting to improve an attribute in his game that might have been lacking. And for us to see after one game, him and Nimick both taking different steps in their attacking flow, it's a sign of things to come. And that's why I was saying a lot on Twitter is there's a lot that now I'm looking forward to despite the result because of how the boys played.
Yeah, I feel like we need a kind of like a Rocky style montage of Cale, you know, out there in the snow, kicking the ball against a wall, or you know what I mean. For me, I went with Dan Nimick. I thought that he was excellent. Like, obviously he's like a great reader of the game, and he knows how to use his body to shield defenders away from the ball and stuff like that. But like his distribution and kind of seeing him playing, as I mentioned earlier on, like almost as like a right back, was kind of different. And I thought him and Zach had a great like little relationship brewing down there. So I think I'll give it to Dan, just to kind of different from you guys. So Gary, you know, I know that you did some homework, which I'm really proud of you, man. I'm going to send you like a little gold star. But so you did look at the Vancouver game. They did look very impressive. So what did you learn from what you saw, and what can we expect on Thursday?
Yep. So, quick 3-minute Vancouver scouting report. You boys can feel free to fall asleep or look at your phones. So, first thing first, they off the ball, they're a 4-4-2 team, a pretty traditional 4-4-2 team because they do have two strikers. On the ball, quite interesting. They build with two at the back, which is unusual because I feel like most teams now, it's very in vogue to build with three centre backs like we do. Forge do it as well. Most teams do it. But Vancouver build with two centre backs. Their two full backs become wing backs very quickly. Their two centre midfielders stay as centre midfielders, and their right and left winger tuck in and become tens. And then they have the two strikers as well. And that's another unusual thing, having two strikers. So it's a 4-4-2 off the ball, and it becomes like a 2-4-2-2 or something on the ball. They're good because they commit a lot of players into attack by removing a third centre back and only having two centre backs. That's just another body you can have in advanced areas of the pitch. You can kind of think of it like they've taken out a centre back and added a striker. So there's a lot of players up there. How that works for them is it's very difficult to get out once they get the upper hand because, again, they've got so many bodies in that part of the pitch. You can't really play through them very easily. But I think if you manage to play through them, you could have a lot of joy against them because those two centre backs look very, very isolated at times. And I think they can be pressed as well. But my thing would be is the most important part of our game on Thursday is going to be how we exit and what kind of exit passes we choose. Because if they're kind of throttling us with their seven attacking players or whatever it is, if we win the ball back, how can we escape? I don't think there's any space in the middle of the pitch to escape. I think you've got to exit to the exteriors of the pitch, exit out to your wingers, because that's where the space is going to be. Because everyone else is central. If you can exit into that space behind their wing backs, you could hopefully isolate their two centre backs very quickly. And I tell you what, do you know that thing Harry Kane does? He did it for Tottenham, he does it for Bayern Munich, where he drops right in from striker, Son and whoever is to the side of him, and he plays it first time round the corner to them. That is the out ball we want to play. If we can like somehow create opportunities to get the ball into those areas when we're kind of counter-attacking on Vancouver, loads of space to play into. But easier said than done. And they're a very good team. They've got some serious talent in that team. You've just got to find the space and find the spare man, and we might have a good chance, but it's going to be tough.
So this might be a new part of the show, Gary's opposition corner. Huh?
Yeah, that's not bad actually, mate. I love that.
But I think how much of it as well was down to a poor Valor team. I think Valor are, we kind of mentioned in the our preview that they're probably going to struggle, and they just didn't. Apart from the goal, they just didn't really have much about them. So, do you think that Valor made them look good, or do you think they are actually a talented team?
Little bit from column A, a little bit from column B, I think. Yeah, they're not great, are they? I think they're one of those that's probably the easiest thing to predict going into this season, that they were going to struggle. And I don't see that changing. I feel like they might be the whipping boys this season.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because they like you know obviously their numbers came out and they weren't great. Like you lost over $1 million and they need 5,000 fans to fit in there, and it's gonna be tough to get people back if they're getting their asses caned every week. So let's hope it isn't as bad as what we think. So Chris, we're gonna do some listener questions here. So I thought we'd start off with you, if that's okay. Okay, so this one's from Denton, and it's kind of like a little bit of a you. We don't know what the fuck we're talking about, kind of a question. I guess the big question isn't about the Wanderers, but Pacific. A lot of people have said that they had a brutal last season and weren't expected to do well. Does this show that we were too quick to dismiss them?
Yes, especially considering I'm the one blowing the horn on the train that Pacific was gonna suck this year. And it's easy to also say, sour grapes for how last season ended. Oh, you guys are just judging them because we ended your season. I just didn't see the quality that they brought in. I was unsure of what they had brought in But compared to who the other clubs had brought in, and, you know, we talk about a Vancouver, we kind of let them go under the radar too until Gary reminded us, you know what, these guys are actually all right. You know, I just didn't see Pacific countering what the other clubs were doing. But I think that if I'm going to look back on that match, you know, at the end of the season, I'll remember the way Merriman managed that match. You know, Pacific were very aggressive. They weren't scared to take that foul. They were stunting a lot of Halifax's attacks in the first half, and they weren't scared to do it. You know, there was an opportunity where Zach was pretty much damn near wide open on the wing. And when Rampy was getting the ball to turn to hit the ball to Zach, they just completely took Rampy out. They were not hiding and were not shy about the style of football that they were trying to play. And I'm not trying to be rude or disrespectful, but that's normally what clubs do when they don't quite have the skill set. They're using their bodies to win matches rather than their minds. Or I shouldn't say that in that way, because it does take a bit of mental fortitude, if you will, to throw your body into another person to stop them on an attack because you're risking injury yourself. So it is a play style that, as much as I don't enjoy it, I do respect it, because it takes 11 guys to commit to that system for it to work. And I think that maybe we were quick to judge the quality of the team because of the names and not the manager. And I've said Merriman's under pressure, even though they made it to the semifinals last year, just because those supporters have high expectations. And I kind of felt like their season was on the up, and then it kind of fell off of a cliff. Their playoff run kind of papered over the cracks, and the lack of players coming in, I thought, was more of a indictment, if you will, on how the season went overall, rather than let's stick around because we went on a playoff run. I think Merriman has a body of players who are willing to fight for them. I think that's what we saw in the playoffs last year and what we saw in this first match this year. So I don't think I was wrong, per se, to answer Denton's question in saying that they were going to kind of be like that seventh, eighth place team, because I do remember even saying they literally could finish second, but they could also finish eighth. That unpredictability is what really stood out for Pacific for me. And I was just seeing a lot more in the other clubs for me to rate them above Pacific. So Denton is definitely half right that we did not judge them correctly, but I do think that the full season's tale will probably be a little bit more of a realistic answer as to what Pacific is. I think this was just one of those days where the Wanderers could have won 4-1 themselves if a couple of those chances found the back of the net, and a Julian Dunn doesn't quite make that lunge after buckling in the turf. So yeah, I see where Denton's coming from. And like I said, as the guy who's blowing the horn on the train, I was wrong.
Being honest, like, I kind of underplayed myself how good of a coach James Merriman is. And I think, you know, he obviously learned quite a lot being an assistant to Pa. And I think he's brought his own style. And it's a sign of a good manager, Chris, as you said, that, you know, if you kind of use the tools that you have. And they do have some really good players, but he really sets them up really well. But you can also feel on another day they're going to get spanking, because they didn't really offer that much going forward. It was like, it's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of watching like a team that's kind of mid-table, like a Crystal Palace, you know what I mean? That they will win some games, and then they probably won't. They'll probably get beaten by, as you said, we could have won 4-1 in that game. So, yeah. Gary, this one for you. It's from Halifax Dave. Besides finishing, any causes for concern? What would be the expected changes for Wednesday, Aiden or Farron coming in?
No huge concern for me. Like we talked about, the only small complaint I had was I felt like we were rushing things a bit when we were looking for an equaliser. We were crossing a little bit too much. Just a bit more patience. You don't lose the game in the 65th minute. You've got time to come back into it. So that'd be the only thing for me. In terms of changes, I would expect 4-3-4-5 maybe, because first game of the season, you've just kind of found your legs a little bit, quick turnaround for another game whilst you're still in another time zone. I think those are kind of ripe conditions for injuries. If anyone hasn't loaded well, if anyone's feeling a few little twinges, which they will be coming out of preseason, injury dependent, I would expect some people to come in. I don't know who's injured though, but it'd be nice to see Coimbra get a go up front as well. But saying that, I do also want Valeski to start to develop these relationships. I'd like to see Jeremy come in because I feel like him and Lorenzo are going to build a good partnership, as good as Rampy was. And I thought Rampy was really good actually. That's the only question with when we're talking about kind of rotation and depth is, and a few people have said this, I can't think of any real natural fits to come in as one of the three centre backs.
Yeah.
And that's a slight concern going forward. If there's able to be an injury there with Karim still out, who are the backups? But I think that's a conversation for another time when one of them does get injured, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that was a good thing about bringing Jeremy in. I think Jeremy like can certainly play as a left centre back, and I think he would could fit in there quite well. But I think that's the thing I would like to see, or I would suspect that like Julian Dunn probably won't play a full 90 minutes because it like coming back from injuries and stuff like that, you might want to kind of just give him a little bit of a rest, but let's see what happens.
And if you do that, you can move Kaelin to the centre back spot, and Tim Mateo can come back as a left centre back, which is doable. And then you just need Jeremy playing on the left or something.
Yeah, so I think we've got some options, but it is kind of like we don't really have a like for life though, as you said, until Kareem comes back from
Yeah.
injury.
That's why I was surprised that we didn't keep Max, just because he appeared to show tremendous quality during the open training sessions, and everything I've heard and seen from him over the years playing, whether it was in the senior men's league or in university, he has the qualities. I think even just from a sheer body standpoint, where he doesn't have to be on a hard deal, he can be on a U Sports contract or a development contract. I'll be curious to find out or know what happened there, because I thought that he was penned in, not even penciled in. Hoping for Kareem to come back soon, because as much as you don't want to fear the worst, and you guys were saying we've got a Jeremy, Rampy has minimal center back experience as well, and he even showed small glimpses of that in the game against Pacific, kind of dropping back when Kale and Dan were getting forward. It's still a little bit scary to only have these three bodies right now, and that you said it, depending on what kind of we could be looking at a system with two center backs on Thursday, because there's a potential that maybe this is part of Dunn's easing in to his fitness. So yeah, I hope that Matten has something kind of in the barrel right now for the center back situation, and maybe not. Maybe there's enough faith there in both Jeremy and Rampy if the worst comes to worst. And then you talked about Wesley. Massimo Farron has minimal experience, I'm sure, in that position as well. Just based on how he plays, it feels like he could be comfortable, kind of like how a Jake Ruby stepped up and to play in a center back role. So there's a lot of smart footballers on this club. I think that's one of the biggest pluses from last year rolling into this year, is not only did we retain high quality players, but we retained really smart players. And these guys have shown and proven that they can step into roles and into positions that they're not necessarily comfortable in. Fingers crossed, knock on wood, poke the reverse voodoo doll that we don't have to deal with an injury crisis in that position. But if we do, I have a lot of faith in Matt and Patrice that they have a plan B, plan C. And with the rosters expanding, it gives clubs hell of a lot more options. They could even call Luke Green for frig's sakes. He's got experience with the club. If he's not, you know what I'm saying? There's options. The under 23s, I'm sure that there's some bodies there too. They'll be in the system. They'll be training. So I'm not so nervous, but I'm definitely a little anxious, just because it is a lack of depth. Four to five center backs for a two center back system is normally good depth. And here we are with three for three, four with Kareem. It just still seems like we're a little thin in that position. So
I agree with 99.9% of that. The 0.1% I disagree with is I don't think there's any chance we go to two centre backs against Vancouver because they play with two strikers, and if we went to two centre backs, it would be bad, I
I do
think.
agree. I do agree. I and like to not have somebody like Mo Omar, for example, if we do play two in the back, to have like Mo almost playing like a hard anchor, where he's essentially a third center back anyways. I don't really think we've got that guy on this team. Like, Jeremy can play deep. Rampy can play deep. They've got the physical attributes, but it's about having that positioning, which Mo improved on so much over his 2 years. So, yeah, that is definitely – I agree with you. And that's why I'm curious. So if Dunn is on a minutes restriction and we play three in the back, who does become that third center back this early in the season? Are we going to do it by committee? Wesley, Riley, does Zach Fernandez play right center back in that Nimic role where he could make those forward runs that Nimic
That's making, a good shout. Right? That is. Yeah.
There's definitely – like I said, we've got really smart players, so the variety will come from their wisdom, for lack of better terms.
Peter Shadow, don't turn your phone off. You might get a call up. this one is from Joe Timothy. This is for you, Chris. Weirdly, I found the defeat reassuring. I thought we actually completely dominated in the way no other team did on Saturday. What do you think we need to tweak to turn that dominance into goals?
That's a good point, actually, now that I think about it, because Forge and Cavalry was pretty well balanced. I felt like York and Ottawa both had their moments too. I do, yeah, and even in like the Vancouver Valor sense, I know that wasn't on Saturday, that was the day after, but a lot of Vancouver's later dominance came from the fact that they were just naturally up a man. Like they were able to do what Gary was discussing with their system a little more liberally because they were up a man. They were able to send David Norman forward. They were able to attack Campbell when he was playing out of position. Like, they had a way to get through. I think that is, and I've been saying it on Twitter, I've been kind of like, I shouldn't say beating a dead horse, it's a terrible term, but I've felt really optimistic how the ascension into the match showed itself at the very end, where we were beating on the door. It seemed like we were going to get an equalizer time and time again. To me, that is something that I hope that the boys, I know that they're down and out a little bit. I know that they're not happy naturally because, you know, you want to win matches. But I also think that if they look at the game tape and Patrice reinforces the positives from that performance, especially the last half hour, and especially after the substitutions were made. And that's not even a slight on the guys that were on the field before, because they were all growing into the match and all put in good performances. But the substitutions, albeit maybe a little bit late, were all effective. So those guys are nipping at the heels of the guys that got the start. So that is the biggest part of the optimism for me, is the depth that we knew this club had. It showed itself even in a clean sheet defeat, because on another day, as I've said before, 3-4-1 victory on another day. So, yeah, I definitely agree that I feel good. And I also respect the fact that the supporters of the other clubs recognize it as well. Talking to some Ottawa fans, Forge fans, Pacific fans. One of my favorite Pacific fans on Reddit basically said, we got away with that one. The recognition that we are of quality, I think, is really important too. And I think the boys put in a good display despite the result.
So I just want to thank everybody for the questions. Again, we really appreciate you listening to the show and giving us some things to talk about. And it's great to get people's thoughts on the performance as well. So, Chris, it's been great hanging out. Gary, thanks as always. And hopefully we get a better result on Thursday.
Time to take off, folks. Get out. Out to box.